right after this, right after our show. And always remember, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.
This is the Quality News Network. Former vice presidential candidate John Edwards and his wife Elizabeth held a press conference in North Carolina today to announce that her cancer has returned. She was diagnosed with and treated for breast cancer in 2004. Edwards says he will continue his 2008 bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, saying the campaign goes on. Mrs. Edwards has cancer in her rib. The doctors are saying the cancer is treatable but not curable. She says she is incredibly optimistic about the future. A Senate panel today authorized subpoenas for top White House political aides, including political adviser Karl Rove, in connection with the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The House authorized its own subpoenas yesterday. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer noted that authorization is not the same as issuance. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is once again telling reporters that he will not resign over the firings. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were fired for poor performance. Opponents say they were removed for political reasons. President Bush is challenging Congress to pass the Iraq War Emergency Spending Bill without adding conditions about the pullout of U.S. troops. The House debate on the $124 billion spending bill starts today, with a vote expected tomorrow. An Appropriations Committee vote is scheduled for today on the $122 billion Senate bill. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is urging Congress to reopen the federal fund for victims of 9/11. The mayor says many people who worked to clean up the World Trade site have fallen ill because of exposure to several deadly chemicals and toxins within the rubble. In Baghdad today, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference when a rocket landed near the Prime Minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and appeared shaken but was unharmed. No injuries were reported as a result of the attack. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken when the attack occurred in Baghdad. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. Three men have been arrested in connection with the July 7, 2005 terrorist attacks that killed 52 people in London. According to Scotland Yard, two of the three men were arrested at the airport as they were about to board a plane to Pakistan. Nuclear disarmament talks with North Korea have fallen apart. The chief North Korean envoy has left the negotiations and returned home. The North Korean government has refused to sit down at the bargaining table. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Harry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Harry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Today is World Water Day, and the theme of this year's UN event is water scarcity, a problem caused by overpopulation and pollution. Scientists at the UN say that by the year 2025, two-thirds of the planet's population will be living with, quote, water stress, end quote. North Africa, the Middle East, and West Asia will likely be the worst afflicted regions. Two new imaging techniques should help doctors diagnose lung disease earlier. University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine researchers say one of the techniques uses an MRI to watch helium gas flow through the lungs as a person breathes. Doctors should be able to use the results of the research as early as this summer. A federal judge today struck down a U.S. law, the Child Online Protection Act, passed in 1998, which makes it a crime for website operators to allow children to access harmful material. The law was challenged by the ACLU. The decision is seen as a victory for the First Amendment. NBC, Universal, and News Corp are teaming up to distribute television shows, movies, and video clips online. They are working with several large internet companies in the venture as a way to counter the popular video sharing website, YouTube. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.69 a barrel. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 13, the NASDAQ down 4, and the S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board.
Oh.
11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
these
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. Now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Well, g'day. I now know it is Friday here, which means it's Thursday over there. I'll get it right today. How you doing, everybody? Welcome to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we got a full show today. Got some kind of interesting conceptual things to talk about. But before we get there, and Agnes, if you could just have that bit of audio that we talked about earlier handy, I think we should just go straight to this. Because yesterday I mentioned about Gore going to testify before Congress, and I guess I was a little behind the eight ball with going to sign that, telling everybody to go sign those cards. I didn't realize that he'd already been there. But hey, what are you gonna do? But anyway, I'm looking forward over the weekend to watch the full testimony, which is about almost 3 hours long on C-SPAN. But, I was surfing around a little bit last night, and Crooks and Liars just has this great bit of video. We're going to play the audio for it in just a second here, but it's this is just awesome. And Barbara Boxer, go baby, go baby, go. She just kind of, and you can find the clip at Crooks and Liars and scroll down a bit, and you'll see a post that says Boxer tells Inhofe an inconvenient truth. And basically, what occurred was Mr. Inhofe, if I'm saying his name right, I have no idea, and I really don't care. He's a complete global warming denier, and he was posing questions to Gore, but then wanted Gore to be wanted to reply in writing because he felt that Mr. Gore's answers were too long-winded. Oh, please. And, well, let's just say Ms. Boxer decides to tell him exactly how things work in the Senate now. And listen at the end to the reaction of the gallery. The clip will open with a little bit. I think it's from CNN that sets it up. But this is just brilliant. Go ahead, Agnes, roll this.
Some new sound coming from the Hill. This is a heated exchange between Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat from California, Senator James Inhofe, Republican from Oklahoma. This came during former Vice President Al Gore's testimony on the Hill about global warming. Apparently, this heated exchange started because Senator Inhofe wanted shorter answers from Gore. Let's listen in.
I mentioned this in my opening statement about they're criticizing you for some of your being too alarmist and hurting your own cause. Now, I'll ask you to respond in writing for that one, because that would be a very long response, I'm afraid. Now, it seems that everybody in global warming and the media joined the chorus last summer.
Senator Inhofe, we'll freeze the time for a minute.
Oh, yes.
I'm just trying to make...
Take your time. We're freezing the time.
We're freezing the time. Just for a minute. I want to talk to you a minute, please. Would you agree to let the Vice President answer your questions? And then if you want an extra few minutes at the end, I'm happy to give it to you. But we're not going to get anywhere.
Why don't we do this?
We're asking
Why don't we
questions.
Do this? At the end, you can have as much time as you want to answer
no, that
all
isn't
the questions.
The rule of, you're not making the rules. You used to when you did this. You don't do this anymore. Elections have consequences.
Wow.
And when she says, you don't do this anymore, she holds up the gavel. I must have watched that clip about 5 times yesterday just to relish it. I just thought it was one of the most beautiful moments that I've seen. And if that's just a taste of what went down yesterday, go, Boxer, go. I am so proud of my... She's my senator, you know? I vote by mail, and I voted for her twice. She's just, people have some problems with her here and there, but I'll tell you what, when it comes right down to it, Barbara Boxer's just, she's the bee's knees as far as I'm concerned. you don't make the rules anymore. And the final, and I love that final line, elections have consequences. Oh, but anyway, it seemed as though there was a bit of a hero's welcome for Al when he made his first appearance since being vice president, back in 2000. And, I just think it's good. And again, there's more murmurs that, he may run. And I still have my doubts whether he will or not. But I'll tell you what, if he decided to run, I don't think any of the other candidates stand a chance. To be perfectly honest, I think they Democrats know that Al Gore won in 2000, and you cannot tell me that Democrats. And I think some, lost in the wilderness, real Republicans would, pull out in droves for Al, because he's been doing some really, really, really great stuff. And so you can find that clip on Crooks and Liars. You got to scroll down a little bit. It's from yesterday, but it's just brilliant. All right, folks, we're heading into our first break here. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the concept of building new communities. And found a website yesterday. I didn't, actually. Gail did. That deals with... It's the author of a book called Walkable Streets. And there's a thing called the Ahwahnee Principles. And I find this really, really interesting. And... I think you all will enjoy this greatly. So stick around. We're going to hold off on the phones for a little bit, because I want to get into this. So Just stick with us. If you want to get on the program, drop me an email at John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com for the time being. But I want to get into this, and then we're going to do today's track of the day, which is just completely just for myself, and I hope everybody else enjoys it. But stick around. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back after this.
The only way to get there's to go straight down. There's a bathroom and there is no sink. The water out of the tap is very hard to drink, very hard to drink.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And this is really, really, really fascinating stuff. Now, yesterday I read the McKibben piece, and I've got another piece from him a little bit later in the show, on, you know, global warming won't buy us happiness, and the whole idea that you know, we just the more we prosper financially, the less life we have and less connection to our neighbors and our community that we have. And so from walkablestreets.com, And there's a link to the particular page on today's show post. The Ahwahnee Principles. This is really cool. In the fall of 1991, some of the leading professionals in urban design, including, and it's a huge list, I won't go through it, met to develop a set of community principles based on new and emerging ideas in community design and planning. For a detailed article following Ahwahnee Principles, see Corbett, Judith, and Velasquez, September 1994, The Ahwahnee Principles Towards More Livable Communities. And the preamble states, existing patterns of urban and suburban development seriously impair our quality of life. The symptoms are more congestion and air pollution resulting from our increased dependence on automobiles, the loss of precious open space, the need for costly improvements to roads and public services, the inequitable distribution of economic resources, and the loss of a sense of community. By drawing upon the best from the past and present, we can first infill existing communities and second, plan new communities that will more successfully serve the needs for those who live and work within them. Such planning should adhere to these fundamental principles. 1. All planning should be in the form of complete and integrated communities containing housing, shops, workplaces, schools, parks, and civic facilities essential for the daily life of residents. 2. Community size should be designed so that housing, jobs, daily needs, and other activities are within easy walking distance to each other. And this is that's a big one. 3. As many activities as possible should be located within an easy walking distance of transit stops. And boy, is that a problem here in Australia. You take the train somewhere, and sometimes you still got to go walking for yonks just to get to where you want to go. And in this climate, you know, forget getting dressed up to go anywhere because you're just going to be a sweaty mess by the time you get to your destination, which ends up just supporting more people continuing to drive their cars everywhere, yada, yada, yada. 4, and this I think is really, really crucial. A community should contain a diversity of housing types to enable citizens of a wide range of economic levels and age groups to live within its boundaries. You know, all this gated community crap that goes on, where people who are, you know, have more than the others feel like they have to go live away from the unwashed, you know, and this just creates more disconnection. 5, businesses within the community should provide a range of job types for the community's residents. 6, the location and character of the community should be consistent with a larger transit network. 7, the community should have a center focus that combines commercial, civic, cultural, and recreational uses. 8, the community should contain an ample supply of specialized open space in the form of squares, greens, and parks whose frequent use is encouraged through placement and design. You know, as I'm reading this, it's all kind of like, well, this all makes sense. you know, this doesn't really sound that hard, does it? 9, public spaces should be designed to encourage the attention and presence of people at all hours of the day and night. And I think that this is another crucial one. You know, how many communities have usable parks, but there's no lighting, or because they haven't set up the infrastructure to make them safe, they lock the gates at sundown. You know, which ends up keeping people in their homes, watching their plasma TVs, as opposed to just going out and hanging out with their neighbors. You know, I kind of sit here and think about this. You know, Gail and I have been living in this new place since October. I still don't know the neighbors on the house just 10 meters in front of where I'm sitting right now. And the only neighbor that I know who I've had a couple of passing conversations is Greg, the guy who shares the other half of this house, who rents the other side, who seems like a lovely guy. And at some point I'm going to make the move to actually have a bit of a chat with him. I'm going to invite him over for, you know, snags on the barbecue one weekend. And this is, you know, if you actually got to know people in your community from different walks of life, don't you think you'd have a little bit more concern for their well-being and might have a slightly better overall concept of how the rest of your community, people who are different or other than you, or in a different economic class than you? Okay, where was I? okay, 10. Each community or cluster of communities should have a well-defined edge, such as agricultural green belts or wildlife corridors, permanently protected from development. Chico, California does this. And I lived in Chico. And, you know, not exactly this, but, you know, there's Bidwell Park, and which is huge. And it's written into the charter of the town that in a certain fairly large radius around, you cannot build buildings higher than 2 or 3 stories, I think it is. And, you know, there are some communities that take these kind of principles on. 11, streets, pedestrian paths, and bike paths should contribute to a system of fully connected and interesting routes to all directions. Their design should encourage pedestrian and bicycle use by being small and spatially defined by buildings, trees, and lighting, and by discouraging high-speed traffic. 12, wherever possible, the natural terrain, drainage, and vegetation of the community should be preserved with superior examples contained within parks or greenbelts. 13, the community design should help conserve resources and minimize waste. Hey, I mean, these are all so simple, but it's great to see, you know, I mean, this has been compiled by some people who do this stuff, who understand the run-on effects of designing, you know, livable cities. Because I live in a city that I consider not livable. 14, communities should provide for the efficient use of water through the use of natural drainage, drought-tolerant landscaping, and recycling. 15, the street orientation, the placement of buildings, and the use of shading should contribute to the energy efficiency of the community. Again, solid city planning. And a great example of really bad city planning, Surrey Hills, which is one of the subdivision suburbs of inner Sydney, back in the early part of the 20th century when it was being designed, they approached a city planner who I believe was involved in designing the Soho area of New York City. And so they said, look, we're curious to, you know, do something similar to what you've done. We like the look of it. And so he sends them a Northern Hemisphere plan, a similar one, saying, well, have a look at this. This is one that I think could be developed for Sydney. And they looked at it and they said, love it. Thanks very much. Bugger off. And he goes, wait a minute. I got to make some changes for the Southern Hemisphere. Ah, you American bad boy, don't tell us what to do in our own backyard. But you're going to be in shadow all day long. And guess what? Go to Surrey Hills, you never see the sun all day, even in the summer. So that ends up meaning that all these businesses in these buildings end up having to use powered lighting all day long. That is bad planning. All right, we're getting up on the bottom of the hour break, and we'll pick this up because there's a little bit left. I just got through the preamble. Now, there's two more sections, regional principles and implementation strategy. So we'll cover those when we get back, and then we'll do today's track of the day, which is a very, very yummy bit of music. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. I will be back straight after this. Stick around.
there's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robertson. after time, and it goes back for years. You know, let's just talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breeds that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes. It was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Right, welcome back to Fox Stuff. Tool. I can't avoid doing that. Just, I find that band so unbelievably yummy. Anyway, getting back to this this set of principles, and so you want to check this out, go to walkablestreets.com. This is just some really, really cool stuff. So we got through the preamble, and it's all very, very common sense, but yet stuff that takes a conscious effort to implement. And, probably these are the things that don't line certain people's pockets, which is probably the biggest hurdle to get over, would be the lobbying by, you know, large construction firms who love huge contracts to build roads, things like that. Now, it goes on to regional principles, and there's just four of them. One, the regional land use planning structure should be integrated with a larger transportation network built around transit rather than freeways, hence my previous point. Two, regions should be bounded by and provide a continuous system of green belt wildlife corridors to be determined by natural conditions. Three, regional institutions and services, as in government, stadiums, museums, etc., should be located in the urban core, not like the stupidity of what they did here in Sydney for the Olympics and stick Olympic Park way out in the middle of nowhere that you can't get to it without a car. It's out in this area of Homebush, not to mention the fact that they built it on top of an old toxic waste site. where most of Vietnam's Agent Orange was produced. And that's a whole nother story that has been buried here. And we invite families there. Four, materials and methods of construction should be specific to the region, exhibiting continuity of historic and history and culture and compatibility with the climate to encourage the development of local character and community identity. Bingo! This is all really, really common sense stuff. You know, it's one of the things that Gail and I walk around this, the you know, areas in this city and virtually everywhere in this country that I've been, in Australia, and designs of homes are absolutely just kind of stupid for the climate. Completely inefficient. There's virtually no codes for mandatory insulations in at least in New South Wales. So, I mean, whether it's the air conditioning during the summer or the little bit of heating that people have to use in the winter, it's all just seeping straight out of the homes. You know, it just, there's no thought to this, and it's just unbelievably wasteful. The last section of this little thing is called implementation strategy. One, the comprehensive plan should be updated to incorporate the above principles. Two, rather than allowing developer-initiated piecemeal development, local government should take charge of the planning process. Comprehensive plans should designate where new growth, infill, or redevelopment will be allowed to occur. And this is really important. We shouldn't be allowing developers to go and get land releases and be able to build, you know, these gated or subdivided communities. I think that if developers want to be able to get public land releases, they need to adhere to a strict set of guidelines about what will be built. Three, prior to any development, a specific plan should be prepared based on these planning principles. With the adoption of specific plans, complying projects could proceed with minimal delay. Four, plans should be developed through an open process, and participants in the process should be provided visual models of all planning proposals. Hey, keeping the public informed, as opposed to allowing developers to just build it and say, here's what we've decided you can have. And I think that, you know, all of this is really, really simple stuff. But it's crucial. And I look at the way Sydney has been growing. And, I mean, the city of Sydney takes up more land mass than any other city on the planet. It's enormous. And it's so badly designed. And here in New South Wales, we've had massive highway after massive highway after massive highway built that are all privately owned, mind you, for-profit roads, which I think is just kind of one of the ultimate evils. And most of them are complete and utter failures. Because once they get to the junctions at the city, they become a mess. And, you know, they call these things large highways, and they're two lanes every each direction. I'm like, geez, that's a city street in America. But go over to walkablestreets.com. It's actually walkablestreets.com/ahwah.htm. Ahwa. And really, really cool. Really, really, really cool stuff. And, you know, maybe I don't know. I think I want to get a hold of this book and have a read. And maybe this is something that we need to, you know, send to every one of our local council members. You know, even just this page, and say, this is what we need to do. This is what I want for my community. And thank you to my partner Gail for finding this last night. I think this is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Okay. We're going to get away from that, and we're going to go to today's track of the day. Now, you all know, aside from Tool, one of my favorite bands out there, or that used to be out there, and hopefully will be back at some point, is Days of the New. And the Days of the New 2, the second album, is my favorite of the three. And this is where young Mr. Travis Meeks built his studio in Kentucky from an abandoned distillery, which I think was quite cool. Kept a heritage building happening. And he went and bought himself one of the last remaining Fairlight systems, and this is one of the original sampling systems, kind of almost takes up half a room. But it, you know, designed by an Australian. Hired himself a Celtic choir, and at some points a little Celtic orchestra, and went from something that resembled acoustic metal to something much more interesting. And this album really showed a transformation in this young man as he was opening up and finding new places to go. And the track we're going to play is called Weapon in the Wound. And this is one of my favorite tracks on any of the three records. It's lush. It's dramatic. The strings at the end are just really, really well done. And as my friend Scott Barry once said, when I first played this album for him and he heard this track, he goes, "Geez, that's a song you and I could have written." And that wasn't downplaying it. It's just, it feels like the kind of stuff I would like to produce. And that's just a little bit of personal insight on really, you know, I mean, when I first heard this second album, I was just like, geez, this is what I've always, the kind of project I've always wanted to get. You know, not exactly, but it feels right to me. It strikes something with me. And I just think this is a great track. So without further ado, off Days of the New 2, Weapon in the Wound. Roll it, Agnes.
Thank you. Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to WaterUseItWisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. I hope you dug that track. I know it's a little bit of a subdued thing, and it's kind of grandiose in its own way, but I really think Travis Meeks just has never really gotten the credit that he deserves for his talents, and you know, you hear some of that and the orchestration work. And he's done quite a bit of orchestrating for films over the last couple of years, so you can kind of see where he would have kind of fallen into that. And there's some orchestral bits in both Days of the New 2 and 3. There are just purely orchestral pieces, which are really really cool. There's one on Days of the New 3 that's just very very dark. And it's counterpoint style composition, which I completely dig. Before we finish up, yesterday I read a piece from Bill McKibben of Mother Jones, and it was a Common Dreams link yesterday. And the smart mom from the chat room sent me this, and I'm not really going to be able to have enough time to get into it too much, because we're getting short on time, but I think that this is a brilliant piece. Why having more no longer makes us happy? And this goes right along with everything that I was what I was mentioning with the set of principles that I was reading earlier in the show. Kibben's piece from yesterday. And it says, for most of human history, the two birds, more and better, roosted on the same branch. You could toss one stone and hope to hit them both. That's why the centuries since Adam Smith launched modern economics with his book, The Wealth of Nations, have been so single-mindedly devoted to the dogged pursuit of maximum economic growth. Smith's core ideas that that individuals pursuing their own interests in a market society end up making each other richer, and that increasing efficiency, usually by increasing scale, is the key to increasing wealth, have indisputably worked. They've produced more than he could have ever imagined. They've built the unprecedented prosperity and ease that distinguish the lives of most people reading these words. It's no wonder and no accident that Smith's ideas still dominate our politics, our outlook, and even our personalities. But the distinguishing feature of our moment is this. Better has flown a few trees over to make our nest, and that shows everything. Now, with the stone of your life or your society gripped in your hand, you have to choose. It's more or better. Which means, according to new research emerging from many quarters, that our continued devotion to growth above all is on balance making our lives worse, both collectively and individually. Growth no longer makes most people wealthier, but instead generates inequity and insecurity. Growth is bumping up against physical limits so profound, like climate change and peak oil, that trying to keep expanding the economy may not just be impossible, but also dangerous. And perhaps most surprisingly, growth no longer makes us happier. Given our current dogma, that's as bizarre an idea as proposing that gravity pushes apples skyward. But then even Newtonian physics eventually shifted to acknowledge Einstein's more complicated universe. How am I doing on time here? Okay. And I'll just get into the first point. If we can do it, we can do it if we can believe it. FDR, LBJ, and the invention of growth. It was the great economist John Maynard Keynes who pointed out that until very recently, there was no very great change in the standard of life of the average man living in the civilized centers of the earth. At the utmost, Keynes calculated the standard of living roughly doubled between 2000 BC and the dawn of the 18th century. Four millennia during which we basically didn't learn to do much of anything new. Before history began, we already figured out fire, language, cattle, the wheel, the plow, the sail, the pot. We had banks and governments and mathematics and religion. And then something new finally did happen. In 1712, a British inventor named Thomas Newcomen created the first practical steam engine. Over the centuries that followed, fossil fuels helped create everything we consider normal and obvious about the modern world, from electricity to steel to fertilizer. Now, a 100% jump in the standard of living could suddenly be accomplished in a few decades, not a few millennia. And to answer Gene's question, yes, this link is in the show post. And it goes on, basically saying that, you know, this... and I've said this before, and I used to say this a lot on Fourth Estate Radio. Sustainable growth is not. We need to find a way to, you know, we're growing faster than we can cope with, you know? And there was a little factoid, and I can't remember where I saw it, that said something like, it took us centuries to use the first trillion barrels of oil, but we've used the second trillion in less than 30. And if these resources truly are finite, which they are, that is not sustainable. So all this growth is not sustainable. We need to find a better paradigm. We really, really need to find a new and better paradigm of the way we live life. And with that, we'll leave it for today. I'd love to thank
Agnes Kincaid for brilliantly producing the show today. Thanks to Bob for announcing. Ben Birch is still running his fundraiser. Run over there. Drop a dime. Drop a little more. Do the right thing, because he's the hardest working man in progressive and liberal radio. Thanks to Gene and Susan, our bloggers, who just keep me loaded with stuff. Thank you to the Smart Mom for the McKibben piece. Thank you. Thank you to Peter Gobbold of Gobbold Computers for keeping everything running in the main studio, and for getting my butt out of jail a couple of weeks ago with my computer. And, you know, just everyone, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you to Scott Berry for the music. And go by Billy Shear's site and check out my commentary from this week on why music is important. I think you'll dig it. So, as we say here on Foxed Up, folks, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
What an asshole I can be is yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean.
This is the Quality News Network. A Senate panel today authorized subpoenas for top White House political aides, including political advisor Karl Rove, in connection with the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The House authorized subpoenas as well yesterday. Once again, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez told reporters that he is not going to resign over the matter. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were fired for poor performance. Opponents say they were removed for political reasons. Former Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards and his wife Elizabeth held a press conference in North Carolina today to announce that her cancer has returned. She had been diagnosed with and treated for breast cancer in 2004. He said he will continue his 2008 bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, saying the campaign goes on. Mrs. Edwards has cancer in her rib. The doctors have said her cancer is treatable but not curable. She said she was, quote, incredibly optimistic about the future. In Baghdad, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference today when a rocket landed near the Prime Minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and was shaken but unharmed. There were no injuries reported in the attack, which occurred in the heavily fortified Green Zone. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. President Bush is challenging Congress to pass the Iraq War Emergency Spending Bill without adding conditions about the pullout of U.S. troops. The House debate on the $124 billion spending bill started today, with a vote expected tomorrow. The Senate Appropriations Committee voted today to approve the $122 billion bill, which also places a March 2008 goal of removing U.S. troops from Iraq. President Bush has threatened to veto any legislation with language about a troop withdrawal. In London, three men have been arrested in connection with the terrorist attacks on July 7, 2005, that killed 52 people. In southern Afghanistan, fighting between